This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to talk now about the truth and limitations to cultural stereotypes about two great American cities, Boston and San Francisco. And for Boston, well, we may as well start with the most enduring pop culture stereotype of them all.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
It is, of course, Cheers, where everybody knows your name. There are some guys named Norm and Cliff who've been going there for, like, ever. Not to mention a former Red Sox relief pitcher who's now pitching you the beers from behind the bar. Steady, old school, predictable. Yep. That's Boston, or at least the Boston of Cheers.
Yeah, and I blame the 80s, because at the same time, on the other coast, San Francisco was represented by a quirky, unconventional house of single guys raising three cute girls.
Whatever happened to predictability? The milkman, the paperboy, evening TV. Did I get to live in here?
Yeah, so whatever happened to predictability, asked the theme song of the sitcom Full House, because where else but on TV could you find such a house existing to be utterly normal? Where else than free-spirited City by the Bay, full of free-loving hippies, free enterprise-loving tech entrepreneurs, and innovation-embracing, gold-rushing, westward-expanding, manifest destiny-loving pioneers? Where else but San Francisco? Meghna, can we stop with the stereotypes now?
Oh, come on, Anthony. I thought you were just getting into it, and so was I. Okay. So we are being more than a little tongue-in-cheek here, and it's time to get serious and be a little more public radio, because there is actually a new study that suggests that these characterizations may be more than just stereotypes. They may actually be the truth. Old and established are characteristics of Boston, and it might mean what it actually means to be Bostonian, to experience life in the city, just as new and free may inform daily life in San Francisco in more subtle and complex ways than the canned laughter on Full House would suggest. So we're joined now by the lead author of this new study. She is Victoria Plaut, professor of law and social science and faculty director of the Culture, Diversity, and Intergroup Relations Lab at the University of California at Berkeley. And she joins us from Berkeley, California today. Professor Plaut, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's really great to have you. So first of all, why don't we start off with a little bit of information or a story from you as to why you decided to take a look at Boston and San Francisco in particular, and how these cultural stereotypes might play out in day-to-day life. Why these two cities?
Sure. A couple reasons. First, I had actually lived in both cities, both as a student and as a professor, and I had noticed these differences for quite some time. My collaborators and I started to study region of the country, not necessarily cities, and we started to notice that cities are cultures too. Cities have local dialects, local industries and economic realities, local healthcare practices. Even the internet, which connects us nationally and globally, often gets used locally. And so we decided to take our region research more local. Mm. Now, why these two cities in particular, they're actually quite similar. They're both blue cities and blue states. They have high concentrations of universities. They care a lot about healthcare, and they rank as top cities for the high-tech industry and VC activity.
Well, I was just wondering, I want to get to more about the similarities in just a second, but you said something a little earlier that I wanted to get some more information on. Where you were a student in Massachusetts, right? And now you're working in California.
I was a student and a professor in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And a student and a professor in the Bay Area.
And so the flow went from east to west for you.
It went both ways.
Okay. And so when you first say, I mean, how many years did you spend in the Boston area?
A total of 7 or 8.
7 or 8 years. Okay. And then when you first went to California, to Berkeley in particular, what was the transition like for you?
Well, so this is an interesting question about what the transition is like for transplants, for people who move from east to west or west to east. The transition for me was a little bit more difficult than I thought it would be, given that I've lived in so many places throughout my life. I was a little bit disoriented. I felt a little bit untethered, a little bit disembedded. And it took some time to realize that I could actually harness the good things about the Bay Area, about the culture in the Bay Area. And I didn't have to leave the old and established completely behind.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit more about these cultural stereotypes that Anthony and I sort of kicked off this segment with. Where and how did you decide to explore whether or not there was any truth to, you know, Boston being old and established versus San Francisco being new and free? Those are the terms that keep coming up in your studies.
Sure. We didn't set out necessarily to study stereotypes per se, but rather we wanted to do an in-depth look at what the culture and history of San Francisco and Boston, as examples of two sister cities here, could tell us about the daily lives of people in these cities in terms of the cultural context, what they find in their daily lives, the newspapers that they read, the websites that they visit, the businesses that they interact with, how those things might shape mm-hmm. their well-being and their sense of self.
So I understand that, and I want to ask you more detail sort of about what your findings were. But I just wanted to sort of get a sense as to, when I read the paper, this idea that there were certain aspects or characteristics of the cities that helped inform how people measured their well-being is what came up repeatedly. And those characteristics for Boston, say, were old and established. So how did you go about choosing those to sort of focus on?
Well, it came from the history, the knowledge of of Boston history and the importance of community and institutions in Boston. On one hand, it's the cradle of the independence in the United States. On the other hand, it has some pretty deeply embedded institutions. It's one of the oldest cities. And I think that history has led to old and established norms that we see still today.
Mm. Everything from Harvard being the oldest college in the country to, as you pointed out, sort of the Puritan forebears, not to mention the fact that there were Native Americans even here before that. But then
exactly.
you say in the study as well that one of the sort of driving factors of our cultural present in California, in San Francisco, is a shorter sort of accelerated history that really kicks off isn't the right word, but sort of gets really going in the middle of the 1800s, around the gold rush.
Exactly. It's a newer history for sure. It's also a particular history of our get rich quick town, a town of unlimited possibility, a town where people came to reinvent themselves. So that newness really got embedded in the history itself. So it's not just about being new. There are other cities that are new that might not have the feel of San Francisco. But it is a town where rejecting tradition and pursuing unlimited possibility is very important.
Mm. So what did you find in terms of how these histories play out in our cultural present? I mean, you looked at headlines in newspapers. You looked at how hospitals in both cities portray themselves. You looked at venture capitalists even. How are these competing histories playing out today?
We did. We actually wanted to look at both people's psychologies, so what they report about their own well-being and sense of self, but also the cultural products in their everyday lives. So as you mentioned, the newspapers, we looked at the Boston Globe versus the San Francisco Chronicle. We looked at venture capital firm websites on both coasts, or headquartered on both coasts, and we looked at the hospital and medical centers. The hospital and medical centers, very striking, big healthcare industry in both cities, and our analysis of 58 hospitals in the two metro areas revealed that the Bay Area ones are more likely to stress progressive technologies and empowering individuals to take a role in their own healthcare, whereas the Boston hospitals are more likely to emphasize taking comfort in being taken care of by an expert system. We saw really very similar themes in the Boston Venture Capital websites. Those stressed their reputation for being experienced and trusted firms, whereas the Bay Area VCs emphasized partnering with pioneering entrepreneurs who want to change the world, the important thing there was having a vision and being first, changing the market.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, we are talking about Boston and San Francisco and how history plays out in the cultures of these two cities today, and how that may or may not affect how we measure our own well-being. My guest is Victoria Plaut. She's a professor of law and social science at the University of California at Berkeley and lead author of a new study called The Cultural Construction of Self and Well-Being, A Tale of Two Cities. So what do you think? Do you think that the fact that Boston has a 400-year thereabouts history matters in how we experience life in the city today? And do you think it's true when people say San Francisco is more innovative and free and Boston is older and more established? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. How do you think history plays out in how we live today? Victoria Plaut, I am curious because this comes back to, as you were mentioning earlier, how we measure our happiness, our well-being, living in a place like Boston or San Francisco. And we were talking about, you know, hospitals in Boston say, look, they project themselves as great institutions, whereas you were saying hospitals in San Francisco may emphasize individual patient care or innovation on the individual level. But how did you measure how that sort of drifts down into, on the street, day-to-day living?
So that's a great question. We did all sorts of things, from looking at respondents in Boston, San Francisco area, counties, from a nationally representative survey of well-being. We surveyed college students in both towns, and we also conducted one study on trains. We went on the commuter rail in the Boston area, the MBTA, and we also went on the Caltrain in the Bay Area.
And you measured how much people feel life is a hassle on those two trains. And having ridden both, I would say that your outcome made a lot of sense because people felt more hassled on the commuter rail here on the MBTA.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that we studied hassles on the train, yes.
So what did you find? What's a characteristic of Bostonians' sense of well-being?
So the most important finding, several important findings. One, taking a step back to how the cultural products and the history influences the well-being, the two cities show different responses in terms of how they perceive the norms of their area. So Bostonians were more likely than San Franciscans to believe that there are clear expectations for how people should behave in their city, whereas San Franciscans were more likely than Bostonians to believe that in their city, people have the freedom to go their own way. And we think that this perception of how strong the norms are has an effect on your sense of self and your sense of well-being. So, for example, in Boston, your sense of self-satisfaction on average in this particular sample was more tied to things like, to social factors like contribution to the welfare of others, educational attainment, financial situation, and work. In San Francisco, it was only tied to work. It wasn't tied to those other social factors.
Yeah, can I just jump in here and ask you a quick question about that particular part of your study? Because I read it quite carefully, and I noticed that you only examined data from European Americans. I take that to be white residents of these two cities. And that seemed to be kind of an interesting choice to me, because both in Boston and San Francisco, we have two cities that are majority-minority cities. So why not look at a cross-section of people beyond just quote-unquote European Americans?
Oh, that's a great question, and that's what we want to do next.
Well, why did you not decide to do that this time around?
So this particular time, in that particular study, we didn't have enough diversity in the sample to look statistically in an appropriate way at the entire sample and make judgments one way or another about differences.
But I see. So you needed a broader sample.
We needed a broader sample, yes. But more generally, that's on the agenda to see how not only race and culture, but also social class intersects. How working class participants in one city differ from others?
Exactly. Because what it seemed to me is that the reality of life in both Boston and San Francisco is one. one, as we were talking about, majority-minority residents who may have a whole spectacular variety of cultural backgrounds that inform, you know, whether or not they feel old and established here in Boston. And then also, for example, in San Francisco, where you have a third of the population with Asian roots, perhaps they may come to the table with different values and assessments. So it seems as if the modern day face of these cities is more sort of complicated than the data in your studies might suggest, and also in terms of how we measure well-being on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely, and how people form multiple identities when they are coming from different cultures. Mm-hmm. It is also a fascinating question.
We've got a couple callers who want to join us, so I'd like to welcome them in. Suzanne's calling from Needham. You're on the air, Suzanne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. What's your thought today?
Thanks for taking my call. I find you're also fascinating. I live in Boston, have always, except for, you know, college, and then our closest friends moved to San Francisco and were from there originally. So I spent many years traveling back and forth 3, 4, 5 times a year. And I met a lot of their friends and was involved in their community with them as well. And I found so many people I met in San Francisco, I felt like were not from there, and that they were only there because it was as far as they could go west. And that if there were somewhere further, that's where they would be. And it just struck me that it felt like Boston is sort of like your parents and patriarchal, and San Francisco is like the wide-eyed adolescent who is, you know, it can sort of go to the end of the earth to find the next cool thing. And so I find what you said in the beginning is so, rings out so true just in the people I know from Boston and have met in San Francisco. And I wonder if you found that people just went as far west as they could get.
Suzanne, thank you so much for your call. Professor Plout, that was one of the facts in your study that stood out to me most. The percentage of people in San Francisco versus Boston who say that their family are also from there.
Exactly. That's a great comment from the caller. In the study, when we were doing some research on the demographics of both cities, as it turns out, 38%, only 38% of the San Franciscans are actually native. And the figure is much higher for Boston. Depending on whether you look at Boston metro area or Boston city itself, it's upwards of 60%.
Hmm. Suzanne, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Roxbury. You're on the air, Jim.
Hello. I'd like to come in on what the lady was saying about the diversity in the city not being taken into consideration. And I think that that's very important. I'm a person of color who's lived here for about 70 years. And I realized the difference between being in California and being here. And that is, here we were cloistered and we were living in little villages. Whereas when you got to San Francisco, it was more of a situation where people related to each other organically and naturally, no matter what their phenotype or a culture was.
Hmm. Jim, thank you so much for your call. Professor Plout, this gets back to this sense that there's something in terms of how San Franciscans derive their personal happiness differently from Bostonians that allows, as Jim was hinting at, as far as he thinks, some, you know, more sort of mixing on an individual level.
I think that's right. I think that's embedded in San Francisco's history, where so many people came from so many different places, and it to some degree built the institutions together, and tolerance was built into the history and the institution building itself. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't and there haven't been really striking racial tensions, but I think the caller is onto something. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Well, you were talking just now about tolerance and the relationship between sort of institutional expressions of that. And there's a portion of your study where you write that the longer history and greater institutionalization of the, quote, right way and the way things are done and should be done produce a norm of following the norm. And that's a description that you were offering, or you and your team were offering, about sort of life here in Boston. And while that seems to be true on an anecdotal level, I also wonder about how those institutions interact with individuals. Because while there may be more an establishment feel here in Boston, at the same time, this was, you know, as you were talking about earlier, a hotbed of abolition, which was very radical in the 19th century, healthcare reform here, and the first state to legalize gay marriage. It required the institutions to get that level of freedom, you know, pervasive throughout the rest of society. And we haven't actually seen that so much in California.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a sense that, first of all, the study really isn't meant to say that all Bostonians are one way and all San Franciscans are one way and they all conform with the culture. Not at all. But secondly, it is important to realize that independence is not only a national backdrop in the United States for both these cities, but it's also very fundamental to the history of Boston, as you pointed out. Not just independence, but also a certain type of independence or even a certain type of freedom, kind of a don't constrain me type of freedom. I like to, borrowing from another scholar, I like to call it the difference between freedom from and freedom to. Mm-hmm. In Boston, it's freedom from. It's don't constrain me. In San Francisco, it's freedom to. Freedom to get what you want and to do the things that make you feel good.
And yet, to end where you started, both these cities, at least on, you know, at the 30,000-foot level, have risen to, you know, to kind of be mirrors of each other. They're, you know, have comparative levels of affluence, education, similar sectors. So in the end, does it really matter how much these cultural sort of characteristics and measures of well-being differ from Boston to San Francisco?
You know, in the end, I think that you have your finger on something very important, which is that both have their virtues and downsides. Both are viable ways of being. One way of being isn't necessarily better than the other. And both can serve as an important resource, both for individual psychology, individual self and well-being, but also for businesses, healthcare, social relations, communities, and the like.
Well, it's a fascinating study, and we look forward to reading what you come up with next when you do those more granular level of detail. Victoria Plaut is professor of law and social science and the faculty director of the Culture, Diversity, and Intergroup Relations Lab at the University of California at Berkeley. Professor Plaut, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, continue this conversation online at radioboston.org, where you can also find a link to this study. Stick with us, because coming up, a new film looks at the story of the infamous Boston Strangler. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.